All right, we are up and running. The stream is going. So as people trickle in, I want to go ahead and get our introductions underway. For those of you that don't know, my name is Max Johnston. I'm the politics and education reporter here at Interlochen Public Radio. And we are welcoming all of you to Interlochen Public Radio's candidate forum for the 104th District in Michigan State House. Now, Michigan's House of Representatives is up for grabs this election. Control of it could come down to this race that we'll be talking about today. Here in Grand Traverse County, Republicans have nominated Mr. John Roth. They hope to keep the seat in GOP hands, as it has been for decades. Democrats are throwing their weight behind Dan O'Neill, who's running for the seat for the second straight time. Before we go over ground rules and all the immense topics we'll be talking about for this forum, I want to give both of you a chance to introduce yourselves. Now, Dan, you won the pre-forum coin toss. You go first. I'm going to give you 2 minutes. Introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about why you decided to run. The floor is yours.
Well, thanks, Max. I appreciate the opportunity. I'm Dan O'Neill. I'm an attorney here in Traverse City. Grew up here in Grand Traverse County, raised my family here as well. Went to college at Central Michigan University and then law school at Detroit College of Law. And I've been practicing law in Traverse City for the last 30 years. My wife, Maura Brennan, is also an attorney here in Traverse City. We have three children, Mary, John, and Riley. I decided to run because I looked around at where we were in the state of Michigan and made the determination that the government in Lansing just wasn't serving the people very well. And that, there comes a time, I think, when you just can't sit still, when you need to stand up and go out and start talking to your neighbors about the things you're worried about and putting your heads together to find solutions to the problems that we face. I didn't see myself, quite frankly, it wasn't in my plans to run for office. I've been around politics a bit. I served on the Board of Common Cause, which is an organization that works on issues of money and politics, access to the ballot, voter protection, things like that. Also served 10 years on the Traverse City Planning Commission. But I didn't think that I would run myself. But as I said, I think there comes a time for all of us when we recognize that when things aren't working in government, as citizens in a democracy, we have an obligation to stand up and try and make it right. And that's what prompted me to get involved. So I want to thank you for the opportunity, Max. I'm looking forward to answering your questions.
Thank you, Dan. And John Roth, the Republican in the race. John, same question. Introductions. Why did you decide to run?
Thanks, Max. I'm John Roth, and I'm running to be your state representative. I've been married for the last 33 years to my wife, Karen. We've got two daughters that are just graduated from Traverse City West High School, and one is off to college. Over the last 19 years, I've worked three jobs, one as a manager and a owner of a small business that manages the marina. I've worked at Donor Ski House for the last 19 years, helping my friend Jeff there. And I've also worked at a golf course during that same time. Probably the thing that I want to run for, the most important thing to me, is keeping Grand Traverse County the great place it is. I want to make this place a place that my daughters will feel comfortable coming home, raising their families, getting a job, living here, making this their lifetime home. I hope that's the case if they want to do that. I want to make sure that's good for everybody else's kids too. Probably the thing I'm most proud of what I've done over the last few years is being on the Parks and Rec Commission for Grand Traverse County. I just finished my last term in December last year. I was on the board for 6 years, four of those as chair of the board. And during that time, we made some amazing decisions and amazing things that have happened to Grand Traverse County. We had a very tough issue with our playground that was at the Civic Center. It was full of arsenic and we had to take it down. It was very popular. Playground, not a very nice decision to have to make, but we did. We took it down, and now we went out and raised funds privately and publicly to redo the playground and rebuild it, and now kids are enjoying it every day there. I just love it, and we've also worked with multiple partners during our time on the Parks and Rec Board to bring private companies in to do programming for our county, something that we're happy to do as a landlord of Grand Traverse County. It was nice to get private investment in to make things work better for the county. Very proud of that. And I just want to say that, again, I want to make Grand Traverse County a place that my daughters and other kids' children would feel comfortable living here and making a successful life here.
Gotcha. Great. Thanks, John. So now that introductions are over, I'll go over the ground rules for the rest of the forum. Basically, how it's going to work for everybody is that I'm going to ask a question, and each candidate will be given up to 2 minutes to answer that question. Guys, to keep it simple, if for timing purposes, for like if you're at 1 minute, I'm just going to give you one finger up. If you're at 30 seconds before your time's up, I'm going to give you three. I know it's a little confusing, but I think we can manage. And so that's how the basic format's going to go. If you go over that time, I can interrupt you and mute your mic if need be. So just a heads up. And keep in mind, if a candidate is referred to directly by the other over the course of an answer, that candidate will have up to 1 minute to directly respond. So, for example, if John refers to a policy of Dan's or something specific and refers to Dan, Dan has a minute to respond to that. Both candidates have seen these rules. We've gone over them. I may also have follow-up questions for each candidate that delve into specifics. Same rules apply there, up to 2 minutes for those questions. You guys have looked at these rules before we get into it. Does that all work? Does that groundwork work for everybody?
Good.
Great. Yeah. All right. So the first topic I want to delve into, I think, unsurprisingly, is the COVID-19 pandemic. But before I get to that, I just want to ask generally, and Dan, since you had the top of the introduction, we'll go to John here. John, to start off, what's the biggest issue you think this race will come down to, and what do you aim to do about it if elected?
Exactly. Thanks, Max. It's the economy. It's jobs in our area. We need to know that we're going to have jobs available to us and that we'll stay open. Safety measures need to be taken in consideration, but we need to have that opportunity so folks can still make a living, still survive in our area. The COVID's tough. Obviously, we need to have precautions, but we need to make sure that people can still afford to live up here and have jobs. I really think that people would rather have the money in their pockets than have the government have the money in their pockets. They then can afford to pay for healthcare, daycare, housing, all the great issues that come out every day here, the daily needs that our folks need. We gotta make sure that we are going to really protect our workers. It's so important. And schooling, definitely over since day one, I've been talking about skilled trades and making sure that that is an opportunity for our kids after high school. Working with the ISD, the Career Tech, and the college, and employers, making sure that kids can go to school and get a certificate through maybe the community college that will allow them to do skilled trades. It's a need. It's a tremendous need in our county, and we've got to fulfill that. We're growing so fast, if we don't have that help, we aren't going to survive. I mean, we know there's a housing issue in our area already. So I really believe that's the case. But the economy's got to survive. We've got to keep people working. That's the only way that people can pay for the daily necessities that they have.
Thank you, John. And Dan, same question. What's the biggest issue in this race, and what will you do about it if elected?
Yeah, I think that in this pandemic, at least in the short term, our focus has to be, and the most pressing issue we face is dealing with COVID and the almost certain economic impact that we're experiencing. All of us want businesses to stay open. All of us want our kids in classrooms. All of us would like this to go away. But the fact of the matter is that the daily case count in Michigan is now the highest it's been since April. Case counts are going up across the country, much as folks predicted they would in the fall come winter. And we're really beginning to see the long-term economic impacts. There were over 800,000 new claims for unemployment last week. We're seeing the loss of more permanent jobs. My concern is that the leadership in Lansing seems to be taking their cues from Washington and not addressing this very seriously. We're hearing statements from legislative leaders to the effect that the virus is going to win and we're going to have to live with it. I don't think that's a reasonable approach. I think that we need to do all that we can to limit the spread of this infection. And when we do that, and when we adopt sensible measures and requirements for wearing a mask, which, you know, shouldn't be a political issue or a political statement, it helps keeps us safe. And it helps keeps our businesses open and our schools open. And so I think we need a reasonable set of restrictions in terms of the occupancy of businesses, of the requirement of masks. And I think that it's incumbent now upon the legislature to make that happen.
Thank you, Dan. And now sort of I want to hone in on the pandemic a little bit. You both touched on your answer, but I want to open up to the governor and the legislative response in Michigan to the pandemic. So, John, you answered the last question first. Dan, you can open up this round. Dan, I want you to start off. Let's give a letter grade to the governor's response to the COVID-19 pandemic. How would you grade her response?
You know, I think most people in the district, most people in Grand Traverse County think that the governor has shown great leadership during the course of this crisis. I think that, you know, there's no playbook for this. There was no way to predict, you know, frankly, what tomorrow would look like, and there still isn't. You know, when we select folks and go to the polls to elect our representatives, we have no idea of the challenges that they're going to face. And we certainly had no idea when we elected our current governor what the challenges would be that she would face. But I think most people agree that she's shown great leadership and done it and under very, very difficult circumstances, guided us through what's a very, very difficult time. I think that her actions in extending unemployment compensation and changing the rules for unemployment compensation were appropriate. I think that providing college free tuition to frontline workers was a terrific idea. And, you know, we were at one time third in the country in terms of the infection rate. We're now 37th. We're the lowest infection rate among the Great Lakes states. Those actions that brought us there have allowed us to open our schools, keep our businesses open. So I think the governor's done a good job. The legislature, on the other hand, I think has politicized this in a way that's unnecessary and unhelpful. I mean, there are some things that I agree with. There was a time we were looking at a 25% cut in funding for the schools. That didn't happen. I think they did a good job with that. But I think there needs to be more action from the legislature and less politics.
John, same question. Let's hone in on the governor here. I do have a separate question about the legislature that I want to ask later. But John, starting off, how would you grade the governor's response and handling of the COVID-19 pandemic?
I really don't want to give a letter grade. I don't think that's fair. It's not been apples to apples as far as the governor to the legislature. You know, the first 3-4 weeks of the pandemic, none of us knew. That is correct. None of us really knew what was going to happen, how bad it was going to get. And I was certainly supportive of the governor for the first few weeks. When she decided that she didn't want to work with the legislature, a little more criticism goes her way. I really think that was a huge mistake. I think our state legislature, we have a good senator right here in Grand Traverse County that could add the governor some inside information of what our district needed. But she refused to work with him. There were a lot of mistakes made, a lot of clarifications that were not done with a lot of the executive orders. There were a lot of confusion, and I really think that was where the mistakes were. People want to adhere to the best safety practices they can, but when you have confusing information come out, it's really, really hard to follow. I can tell you one thing in boating, since that's part of my life, boating was legal. And then boating was illegal for 2 weeks. Then boating was legal again, but there was no clarity to what could open. It was just said that boating was open. How about telling us whether the dealerships could open? How about the launch and haul people? Could they be open? They just started opening on their own, gradually thinking or testing the waters and seeing if they were going to get in trouble. Marinas didn't know what to do. The state marinas said the 15th. May, but private marinas were on our own. We had to decide whether it was safe to open or not. So I think there was a lot of confusion, and I think that could have been sorted out if she would have worked with the legislature.
And that sort of pivots to our point. Dan, I know you initially referenced the legislature, but here I think that's a separate question. Dan, going back to you, how would you grade strictly the legislative response to the COVID-19 pandemic here in Michigan?
You know, as I said, I think that the legislature, the leaders in the legislature have politicized this in a way that's been unhelpful. Yeah, it's easy to sit on the sidelines and take pot shots when other folks are doing the hard work of leading the state through a crisis. And I don't think that that was particularly helpful. I do think, you know, that the opportunity is now going to rest with the legislature. You know, I was disappointed. The legislature was apparently in session until about 4 o'clock in the morning last night, passing some legislation to codify the governor's executive order on unemployment compensation. But, you know, the leadership in the legislature had attached, you know, a bunch of resolutions to it dealing with the current selection to the United States Supreme Court, which seems unhelpful and political in a time when we need clear-headed and reasonable responses from the legislature. So that and comments like the, you know, the virus is going to win and we need to learn to live with it, I think are wrong. It's the wrong direction.
John, back to you. You talked about the governor. How would you compare that or really grade the legislative response to the pandemic, John?
Well, I don't know how you can grade them because they weren't involved. They were shut out of the process completely, and that's a mistake. Our government's not run that way. And as the Supreme Court of Michigan just stated, the governor violated the Constitution of the state of Michigan on both the 1945 law and the 1976 law. I think the legislature wanted to be part of it. They wanted to help. I think they'd be more than willing to work with the governor to get things done and make sure safety precautions are out there. They had no choice but be political because they were shut out of the legislative end of it the entire time. Since end of April, they had no opportunity to add anything to this other than political comment. It's a terrible mistake. The governor shouldn't have done that. I think the legislature could have given her a lot of cover if they would just been given the chance. So it's hard to grade them because they're just now getting back to work and they want to do what's right and they want to help the governor the best they can.
And I do want to have a follow-up here, so I'll stick here with you, John. Like you're saying, we're seeing COVID cases rise across the state, including here in northern Michigan. Legislatively, what can we do to curb this? You know, if you are elected, what do you want to do to, you know, whatever capacity to curb this rise in COVID cases that we're seeing?
Actually, I think by giving good information on way to be safe. The mandates, I don't like mandates. I don't think they're right. I think by putting out good information to both people and businesses and telling them this is the way to be safe, help them out, be part of it. Instead, it's been a lot of stick from the government where if you don't follow exactly what needs to be done, we're going to fine you. And I don't think that, I think it's a terrible mistake. COVID is going to be here. We are going to have to deal with it. Unfortunately, we're going to probably live with it for some time. I think people need to be smart. Wear a mask where you can. If you're indoors with a group, wear a mask. I'm just really saddened by what's going on. When I knock on doors, I see women and kids and men inside their own homes wearing masks all the time. They're deathly afraid of this illness. And I think we need a lot less fear tactics, a lot more great conversations about the true facts. It just makes sure people are doing the safe thing. People want to do the right thing if you give them the chance.
Dan, same question. Legislatively, what should we prioritize going forward to curb these rises in COVID cases?
Yeah, first of all, let me just sort of correct the record here. The Supreme Court never indicated that the governor had broken the law. In fact, just the opposite. It ruled that the law that she was operating under was unconstitutional. It's completely different than government officials are required to follow the law as it's passed, as this one was by the legislature. And even if a court subsequently rules that the legislature didn't have the authority to pass the law in the first place. And that's what's happened here. Look, we need more than just information from our state government. People are wearing masks because they're rightly concerned about being infected with a deadly disease. There are 220,000 dead Americans right now, And this is likely to be the deadliest year in American history. States that have decided that they would just rely on the people to use good judgment, like Florida, Texas, Louisiana, have seen the results. Infection rates rise, hospitalizations follow as night follows day, and deaths rise. That we have followed a different path in Michigan, and it works. Everywhere that we have, that everywhere that's followed this path, have achieved better results. And it's not as if the governor concocted this strategy for dealing with this virus. It's the same strategy that's been adopted in states across the country. Every other state except Michigan now, the governor is exercising executive authority in order to put these restrictions in place. And it's also the strategy that's been adopted by every country in the world. This is not all that complicated. People need to stay apart from each other and to limit the spread of this infection. And I happen to think that it's appropriate for the government to put restrictions in place to make sure that happens. I mean, it's only our lives and our livelihoods that are at stake.
Now, I want to move on to environmental issues. We know these are, I mean, broadly, some of the most important topics to some of the voters here in the 104th. And I want to briefly talk about the terms you've both been sort of described in when it comes to environmental issues. John, I know you've described yourself as a conservationist. Dan, you've been described as an environmentalist. I don't know if that's a label you think fits or is appropriate, but that's certainly the labels that have been attached to both of you. And I want to sort of delve into that, and I want to try to figure out what the difference is between the two. So, John, I'm going to start with you. You describe yourself as a conservationist. I'm curious, how do you think that's different from an environmentalist, and how do you think you'd live up to this conservationist label if elected?
Absolutely. I am a conservationist, and I truly believe conservation is somebody that uses the natural resources we have in this area wisely. We protect them when necessary, but when we need to use them, we use them and replenish them if we can. That's what I've always done. I've always considered myself somebody that will definitely use the natural resources. I love to be in the woods. I go hunting. I go hiking, camping. It's a great thing to be in the natural resources. So I truly believe in protecting them. But I think sometimes we get into preservation mode where we don't want to touch anything. And I disagree with that. But things that I've done, I definitely, part of being on the Parks and Rec Board, there were two pieces of property that I saved as I considered conservationist. The property that was out in Williamsburg where the county wanted to sell that to a porta potty company. The Vasa runs through it. The North Trail runs through it. There's a lake in there. By going against the county board and saying that we want to save this, so there's no problem. The Vasa didn't get rerouted. The lake didn't become landlocked. It's important to me to save public lands for private or public lands for public use. We saved that one. There was another piece of land that was the county's looking to get rid of. It was a dedicated for the sports fields. And I stood up to the county board, told them we weren't going to sell it. They were trying to fire sale it, and I disagreed with it. And today, now that property's saved for future soccer fields. So I believe in conservation is just using the land wisely and to our benefit, but not depleting all our natural resources.
And Dan, I want to pivot to you here. And like I said, I don't know if this term environmentalist, this is something you necessarily ascribe to, but I want to ask you if that label fits, and same question, how would you sort of live up to that label if it's something you think is appropriate if elected?
Yeah, I'm not sure what it means to be an environmentalist. By the way, I also believe in preserving public lands for public use. If being an environmentalist means you believe in clean air and clean water, in protecting this place, then I'm an environmentalist. I often say that I think that the representative from this corner of the state ought to be the leading voice in the legislature on the environment, because this place and what it means to us is either the reason that you came here or the reason that you stayed here. And frankly, we haven't been doing a very good job in Michigan of protecting our natural resources and protecting the environment. Clean water is a problem here in Michigan. We have some of the highest PFAS levels in the country. We're dumping 6 billion gallons of raw sewage into the Great Lakes every year from this state because we haven't invested in our infrastructure, including water treatment facilities. And although that is a value that we all share in this district, it is apparently a value that's not shared in Lansing. The current legislature passed a law establishing what I call a polluter panel, a panel of industry representatives and CEOs of some of the largest polluting industries in the state who have veto power over any environmental regulation that's proposed. They passed a law that makes it illegal for us to have an environmental regulation in Michigan that is stricter than federal regulations. We know what the EPA has done in the last 4 years in terms of gutting wetland protections, eliminating the mercury standards for the atmosphere. We in Michigan have a right to and ought to protect water in a different way than they do in Wyoming or Arizona. When I go to Lansing, I'm going to be an advocate for protecting this place, for protecting Michigan's environment, because it's essential to our lives and our livelihoods.
Now I want to move on to education. Now, schools up north face unique problems. We know this because of the region. And we know a lot of these problems have only been worsened by the pandemic. And also we know the budget is going to be the biggest hurdle for many. But I want to ask outside of that. We know that schools up north need more money for many things. We know that. What would you prioritize as a legislator outside of just getting more money to schools to improve the schools in this district? Now, if I remember correctly, John led off the last time. So, Dan, you can open up with this question.
Yeah. So, first of all, school funding ought to be equal across the state. There's no question about that. But you can play with that funding formula any way that you want. And you can't avoid the conclusion that we're not doing very well in terms of education in Michigan. 3 years ago, the Snyder administration issued its 21st Century Education Report. And if you've had a chance to review that, it becomes difficult to sleep at night. Michigan's now 43rd in the country in terms of academic achievement for our kids, and we're falling. We are dead last in terms of funding increases for K-12 education in the country. 2 years ago, the United States Department of Education cited Michigan for essentially failing to provide an education to kids with special needs in this state. I don't know anybody that thinks that's okay. There are a series of recommendations in the report, which I think that we should implement, and we need to implement right away, because the more we wait, the worse the damage is. There are other states that are doing this better than we are, and they're doing a few things different. One, they start earlier and they go longer. And I don't mean the length of the day or the length of the school year. They start at age 2 and they continue at least 2 years past high school with fully funded public education. And where they do that, it works. Most states do charter schools differently than we do in Michigan. You know, the national average for charter schools that are for-profit is about 16%. In Michigan, it's 82%. We lead the nation in for-profit charter schools, and it's not close. We need to change that. Minnesota, I think, has a good model. If you want a school in Minnesota and you want to be a charter school, fine. You have a different idea for curriculum, a different focus. But you're only allowed to build a charter school if your community needs a new school. They will not allow public funds to be used to build a new building, buy new desks, hire a teacher to stand in front of them, when we know it's going to empty out a desk in a public school that we've already paid to build and hired a teacher for. We don't have the revenue for that. We don't have the excess capacity. We also need to change the way that we fund schools. In states that do this well.
Dan, I just want to say you're over 2 minutes. I'll let you finish your thought.
Thank you. In states that do this well, what they do is first design the what they want, class size, test scores, those sorts of things. And then they cost out what a program would cost to deliver those results. In Michigan, we do it just the opposite. We set an arbitrary number and then demand a certain result. It doesn't work.
John, same question. We know funding is going to be an issue. We know the budget is going to be an issue. What can we do to help the schools in the 104th?
Yeah, the Republican legislature just passed the largest amount of money put towards public schools in the history of Michigan, with a declining enrollment. So we're getting the money. I think there's other issues we need to deal with. Broadband is still very huge. We can't, with the pandemic that's going on, allowing kids to either learn at home or be in school, but also with snow days that we occur in northern Michigan. A continuing education should always occur. And if we had a good broadband system up in our area, that would alleviate a lot of those issues. The other thing is not every kid needs to go to a four-year university. If they want to, great, awesome. But we need to start working on more of our local, through NMC, working again with skilled trades, working with career tech, working with NMC, working with employers to make sure that these happen. I know the employers sometimes are a little bit quick to grab some of our students out of our programs. NMC had a couple programs with skilled trades, and the employers after a year would pull them out of there because they had some partial training. We need to work with both the schools and the employers to make sure that they're allowed to finish, get their certificates, get their degrees, and be able to move on to their employment. But at the same time, they have to earn an income. So making sure the classes are available at certain times is hugely important also. But when you start that in the high school age, it's something that we will continue to constantly work on. Equality of the amount of monies that go to each school is important. Rockford, Michigan shouldn't get millions of more dollars than grant TCAP schools do. The other thing is charter schools maybe up here aren't quite as critical. Some people like them, they go to them, but in Detroit, they're really big. A failing Detroit school system, no kid should be able to or should be forced to go to a failing school.
John, you're also over 2 minutes. I'll let you finish your thought.
Nope, that's good. Thank you.